Hey everyone, here with Matty Reynolds of Mindful Oz, and we did a podcast 6 months ago that we actually recorded. We've cut it up into three pieces and we're pushing that live right for your eardrums today. Now, what we've done is, due to it being a throwback, we've got Matty back on air and we want to chat to him about what he's achieved over the last 6 months, because it would only be fair to do so when he's put almost a decade of work into this mission. He had 8 mates die by suicide. He had suicidal thoughts himself. He's had to seek help. He's had to work on himself. And he has built a foundation on himself and his organization like an Egyptian pyramid. And since we last chatted, he has gone off, and so have they.
So what you'll get to do now is listen to episodes 14, 15, and 16. And then episode 17, we will treat you with a 5-minute little bonanza of what Matty's been up to over the last 6 months. So he's a ball full of wisdom, and we can't wait for you to wrap your ears around this one. You're a force. You're on a mad journey. I know you say it's day by day and little bit by bit, but there's a big grand vision out there.
Yeah.
What is on the horizon for Mindful Oz, Matt Reynolds, and the sort of the greater populace who are dealing with these issues day to day?
Yeah, well, it's exactly that. It's day to day, and even for someone, as I said many times, I live with bipolar disorder, so I don't get too far ahead of myself. I don't have grand visions of what we want to achieve. It's about that mindfulness and being in the moment, and I deal with the 1,440 minutes in front of me right now. That's day at a time. That's 1,440 opportunities I've got starting now to be a better person to myself, to be a better person to others. So I know I've got things that I want to achieve, whether they happen or whether that changes. But at the moment, Mindful Oz is really focused on delivering our primary school program to those kids as young as 3-4 years old, teaching them how to regulate, identify, control, and express their emotions. So then there's not those situations that I had with that girl, because we're treating people better. And that girl learns how to deal with that situation better because she knows how to control and express it, because she's probably held on to that for years. So these are the things that we're doing with kids. We teach them mindfulness, we teach them meditation, we teach them gratitude, empathy, and kindness as young as 4 years old. And it's a very beautiful thing. It's something that gives me drive and energy every single day to get up and go again, even when I'm not feeling like it. So that's one of the services that Mindful Oz offers, as well as youth mental health, first aid trainings, speaking engagements, community events where they're free to the public, where anyone can rock up and get. So we do an event in Gippsland or the Bauble Shire. We have five speakers on. So we'll have 3 of lived experience, 2 of professional services, and then we'll have tables and resources of every single service in the area to provide their tools and techniques. So people who rock up not only get to hear from some great storytellers and some great real stories, they get the opportunity to understand, if they didn't before, what's available to them in the area. And that's important to me.
Yeah.
Matt, you were telling us earlier that some of the stuff that you talk about seems too raw for a lot of like the mainstream corporate sponsors that you would talk to. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because I found it very surprising that someone would even dare to silence what you're talking about.
We're in the predicament we're in because of exactly that. I mean, lived experience wasn't a thing many years ago, and it's slowly starting to become that. But they're still stuck at trying to silence the voice of lived experience and water it down because people feel uncomfortable. As I said before, there's nothing to suggest.
What is lived experience?
Someone who's had some sort of experience with the situation, whether that be lived it indirectly or directly, bereaved by suicide, or know someone of.
Right.
I mean, we've all got a story to tell, but I know some people's stories are a lot more confronting than others, and mine's definitely one like that. I mean, to have lost 8 mates to suicide, had 4 suicide attempts, been homeless and lived with bipolar disorder, it's not an easy story to hear or to tell. But what's going to be much harder for society out there for many years to come is as I said before, as confronting as this might sound, to all those out there, naysayers that don't want to hear me speak, is lowering mates into the ground. I mean, I've done that on 8 occasions, and the reason I talk about it is because I don't want to have to go through that same situation ever again. I don't want anyone else to either. And the only way that we're going to get to that place is if we talk about it for all its truths. We've sugarcoated and tiptoed and bullshitted this topic for so long that people are sick of hearing about it. Like when I go into a construction environment or a sporting club, especially to males, it's just like, oh, we've got a guest mental health speaker. It's like, oh, for fuck's sakes, I want to go home. And then that's what we've done to people, because we've talked about it in a way that doesn't make anyone get have any energy or enthusiasm about it. I mean, let's put the... It's never going to be a fun thing to talk about. Let's bring some comfort back to it. Let's bring some innovation and some energy back to a topic that is so dark and make it something that people are okay to talk about. And we do that by being real and speaking to people's hearts, not their fucking heads. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've done for so long. I don't speak to your head. I speak to your heart. And by speaking to your heart, you already know what it takes to live well. Someone just has to show you that you're capable of doing that.
And care and be there for
you. And
be
there and care and be heard, seen, felt and got. And that's the only thing that people ever want to have in their life, is to have those four things. So, you know, I elevate emotions.
Can you repeat those again?
Seen, felt, heard and got.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And that comes from my mentor, Heather Young. So shout out for her. So it's so true, you know. There's reassurances to know you're loved and worthwhile, to be heard instead of butted in and rudely interrupted and stuff like that, and to be understood. And that's by we're understood when people hear us. We're understood when people actually show us that they care and that they are willing to take the next step and go and learn more about what we experience. I mean, so many families know their kids go through these things and then they just go, you know, there's opportunities to do trainings, read books, to understand what they're experiencing so you can better help them. It's too hard. So it's time. I don't have time.
Mm.
Well, guess what you don't have time for? Sitting at the back of a fucking funeral like I have 8 times.
Mm.
Put the work into people that you love every single day, whether that mean a text message or whether that be a smile or a hug, or read a book to understand what bipolar disorder is or depression, to put yourself in a situation where you're at the best. You can only do with what you know with the information you've got in that moment.
Yeah.
So make sure you've got the information ready to rock and roll.
Yeah, and I think that's the key point there, is that people don't have to know as much as what Matt knows or act like a doctor or whatnot, but some basic stuff is just having those two sets of ears and one mouth and listening twice as much, giving a glimmer of kindness or hope, which might just be a smile or might just be a walk in the park.
Mm.
Basic stuff.
Yeah.
It's not, we know that with some depressions, people, you know, will try 30 different medications before they get the right one for them. We know they might have to go to 20 different doctors, psychiatrists, all sorts of stuff. But sometimes that's the long game, whereas in the short game, we can impact with these tiny little things. And I love that. The one thing that I've got from this that I'll adopt is the buckle up and do the five, every Uber I'm in, 5 texts.
I'll definitely do that as well. And also for me is asking that hard question to friends that are in need, I think. Are you suicidal? Yeah. That's been a big takeaway for me because I've definitely tiptoed around it at times.
Yeah. I mean, you won't ever lose anything by asking that question. I mean,
I've been afraid to, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Even working with people in mental health, they've never really done any training on how to deal with suicide. So hearing you say that was definitely impactful for me.
Yeah. And don't be scared about what they're going to say back. Be ready for the worst. I mean, it's a very beautiful thing if someone feels comfort to open up to you. You should be very, very, very proud of yourself for being that person for that person, because I bet they haven't told too many.
And if they actually say yes, there you have an open dialogue to stay as long as you need to, or it may just be one sentence after that, or they may call on you for a coffee or a yarn or 100%. Whatnot. But
actually, that's a good question. So say someone does say yes, like what would we put them in touch with? Your organization, or what's the best way to support someone?
I mean, I would just stay and listen to them and to hear about those thoughts and to hear about those feelings and allow them to get that whole conversation off their chest.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, it's about putting in, you know, other questions like, have you ever thought about telling, you've shared this with me today, that's a really brave thing of you. Is it possible that, hey, could we share it? Do you reckon we could share it with someone else, a trusted adult? Have you ever thought about seeing a GP? I mean, I'm happy to go with you. All these sorts of things. Just show them that, hey, you're in it, I'm in it with you, and I'm going to help you find that the support and treatment, whatever that looks like. You don't want to see professional help and support, that's fine too. What about we do some things together that might, or do, you can do some things in your own time that take as little as 5 minutes to put wellness back in your own hands? Because people are scared of therapy and medication, and I don't blame them. Like, that's a different topic. That's something that I'll advocate for back and forth, black and blue. But putting wellness back in our own hands, like I talked about, gratitude, meditation, mindfulness, value alignment, self-reflection, sleep, exercise, all these sorts of things, 5-minute practices every single day that correlate to a good brain, but we're not doing it.
And not having to run away from it, like not saying that you had to flee, but, you know, they say one of those things that, you know, I traveled a lot in my early 20s, and they say that all travelers are lost. They're like looking for something. And you do hear a lot of like darker stories, or my family this, or my friends that, or my community, or you know, people who are having to like come out of the closet, like, or, you know,
that shouldn't even be a thing, having to come out of a closet. What the fuck? Like,
that's what it felt like when I spoke about mental health and suicide.
Correct, right? Yeah. So there's so many things that are just like, I believe as a society, people like you are helping us beat down these walls, that there shouldn't be a closet for anything. Mm. We shouldn't have to invent mates or whatever to talk to our parents about stuff, because we should have been educated this at 4, 5, and 6 all the way through school. So I guess one last thing is you've got something big that's sort of just brewing now an organisation to do with the UN, is that correct? Yeah. So can you explain to me what that
basically
is?
Basically, I got a new mentor. I'm very, very grateful and lucky. My mentor is Heather Yelland, and she supervises. She's a psychologist, and from the professional background, she's a director of self-esteem and accelerated development camps and that for young kids. So both of the work that we do aligns on so many levels, and she sees the impact that I make, and I see what she does, and she does it so well that I wanted to be, whatever she was doing, I wanted in on. Wherever she was, I wanted to hear from her. I mean, you just sponge up people like that. They're brilliant, and they know their shit, and they can help me be a better person and make a greater impact. And so she's supporting me a lot through my work, and through that, she introduced me to B1G1, which is an organisation that audits 100% audited charities that give 100% of their money back to the community, which is a very beautiful thing. I know some charities don't have the ability to do that. They need people working in these positions full time and not voluntary. These charities make up some of the sustainable United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. So we want to hit these goals by 2030 to make this world a better place. Otherwise, we're probably already in shit.
Dire straits.
Yeah, we are. And
not
so,
the Mark Knopfler classic Sultan of Swing. We're literally in dire straits.
We are. So to just some of these goals, we don't recognise, as I said before, like I speak all around the world and I'm helping out the United Nations third goal, which is good health and well-being. That's all well and good, but I'm flying around the world, so what damage am I doing to the world with carbon emissions and footprints and stuff like that? So all these things that we're doing every single day, how can I rewrite the wrong? And it's like the same correlations what I did with that girl. It's like I can never undo what I've done, but I can rewrite what I'm doing by making an impact in other areas.
Yeah, so offsetting.
Yes, absolutely. So now I've just teamed up with them, so I'm a member of B1G1, where if booking to get me to speak in your workplace, corporate, sporting club, prison, wherever the bloody hell it is, not only am I advocating for mental health, well-being and resilience and suicide prevention, but as portions of that speaking fee now go back to those United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. So you might have a portion where I come speak for you, Jacko, and your ability to say, well, Matt, I want to give this back to prevent sex trafficking in Cambodia. I want to give clean drinking water for 365 days of the year to young kids in Malawi, or plant more trees to offset basically the error that I'm making by flying everywhere, because we can't change that. We've got to do it to make this impact on the world. So let's do the little things that we can to make an impact. So teaming up with this is a no-brainer for me, because not only do I get to right the wrongs that I'm doing that I can't change, but I also get to show that it's not just mental health and suicide I care about. It's not just the correlations of mental health and well-being are a direct relation to all these other development goals around the world that where people are struggling. I mean, clean drinking water on that, how that's going to impact your health in so many ways, and these are the things that I'm trying to do. So why I'm only talking about well-being and resilience, but yet I'm not doing anything else to impact the world where I can be. I mean,
well, it's a great link that you just made there, like clean and drinking water and mental health, because I read a book called Charity Water, which is an amazing book. I recommend anyone to read it. It's called Thirsty, the book, but the organization's called Charity Water. Mm. And they talk about this. One of the big motivations was a girl who'd like killed herself, literally, because a clay pot that fills up with water that she'd have to walk 10 kilometers a day for to get dirty, festering water to keep her family alive. She broke the full pot that was resting on her head, broke, and that meant that was their greatest family asset, and that broke. And then rather than go home and tell her mother, she committed suicide.
Yeah.
And so Even a story like that started one of the world's biggest charities around clean drinking water. So all these social issues that we face you're right. They're 100% directly correlated. And it's just about being a better person, a better citizen or custodian of the world.
And it's something so little for me. I mean, you know, to go out and to use my voice to advocate for mental health and well-being, as I said, we get to impact whoever's in front of me by doing that. But we must simply imitate and mimic the good behaviours to the rest of the world 24/7. I mean, whether it's rocking a smile, it's infectious, it's contagious. What I do on this platform hopefully inspires someone else to take note of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals and go, hey, I can probably be doing something to contribute to this or to help this. I mean, 1 cent it might take. So one of the goals we've got at the moment is for every single person in attendance at my event, I give one... we provide 1 day of safe learning environment for a child in Kenya.
One per one. Wow.
And that's
even for you just giving a percentage of that to this organisation. Yeah. It's one for one.
One for one. So I can help a child in Kenya and I'll never be able to see the direct impact of that, but I just know it's a very beautiful thing. And the first person that benefits out of giving is always ourselves. And that's the true meaning of life, is to not live in the betterment of ourselves, but to live in the service of others. And if I live in the meaning betterment of someone else, and I always have that approach, when you fall, someone's always got your back. Mm. When you fall, someone's always got your back. But at the moment, when we fall, we're not getting picked up. We're not getting helped because we're living for ourselves. And there's too many people out there that only give a shit about one person, and that's themselves. And that's not what we're here to do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's taken me many years to get my head around this is the best way to live. But as I said, it fills my cup up more than anything else, is knowing that I'm doing my utmost to help and support the people around me and mimicking good behaviours. As I said, the goal for me that saved my life was the thought of having kids. I don't want my kids to grow up in the same world that we live in right now. I want my kids to grow up in an environment where they can look at the lonely kid in the playground, put their arm around them and say, hey, I'm here for you. And they can listen and feel empathy and support for that person. I want my kids to grow up in a world where we're not sitting in the car with a resting bitch face. We're sitting in the car with a smile because we're actually grateful for the fucking car we're sitting in and the road we're driving on. Yeah. But we're so fucking negative, and we think we're 7 times more likely as an Australian to think about a negative than a positive.
Yeah, wow.
So to be able to put a smile on our face, we don't know recognize the amount of impact that can have on someone.
Those 13 points of gratitude each morning, I think, would help with that, wouldn't they?
Mate, I mean,
there'd be many people out there that don't even know what a car looks like or how one would work.
No, exactly. I mean, I always reference to the smile, the ability to smile. Like if I'm sitting in there and holding the wheel like this and a kid's sitting in the car with me, he's a fantastic imitator. Our kids are. They're sponges. They take it all in. He looks at dad, who's, fuck you, not letting that car in, doing that. Honking, I'm giving him permission swearing. To do that.
Yeah.
But I could give him permission to smile. And then he rocks a smile, and that's how we change the world. A car could be coming up alongside me on the road, and they could be going through an unbearable amount of emotional pain and hurt. I don't know. We never know. But yet, we're sitting there with a resting bitch face. We're giving them absolutely no meaning and beauty in this world. We're showing them how shit the world is. That car once was me. And I was on my way to my first attempt, and I said, if anyone fucking smiles at me, I won't have to do it. Not one person smiled. Wow. And this is the impacts that we can make with every waking moment. And that 1,440 minutes of the day, starting now, start wherever, is 1,440 opportunities I've got to mimic good behaviours to the rest of the world, to make myself a better person, but help make others better. And that's the work that I want to do. And so this is working with B1G1, and thanks to Heather and Green Supercamp Australia, is a no-brainer for me, because I give a portion of my speaking fee back to the world. I don't need it. I'm not a materialistic person. You know, money's great. I need more of it, no doubt about it. But some people need it more.
Yeah.
And I fill my cup up so much more that if I spend $100 given to clean drinking water, sex trafficking, or a learning or development course in Cambodia or something like that, I'm so much better off than spending that $100 at the pub.
Yeah.
I'm not feeding myself good well-being or anything like that. So, I mean, it's all hand-in-hand sort of stuff, but I'm pretty excited about it, and hopefully that people catch on, because as I said, this, you know, whether it's selling a cup of coffee or, you know, at the barbershop, it's about making a haircut. For every haircut, we're going to give 300 days of clean drinking water back. It's $10.
Yeah.
It's just, I think we don't understand how easy it is for us to do.
Yeah.
But when one person does it and tells this story, and then a couple others go, shit, I can make a difference too. As I always said, one person that goes through an unbearable amount of emotional pain and chooses not to tell anyone is still one person in an unbearable amount of emotional pain.
Yeah.
One person that shares his story all around the world and starts beautiful and meaningful conversations helps others do the same thing. As I said, we're all fantastic imitators. We just have to make sure that we're putting the best behaviour out in the world. And so, I didn't always do that.
runner, so that's and more so than anyone, I think there's, if there's someone offsetting what they do, it's you, mate. I want to go down the path of, because we'll wrap this up pretty soon, but there's the one of the most, you would have met a lot of influential people.
Yeah.
Who's one of the most influential people that you've met, who sort of faced these difficulties?
I mean, right now, I'm very grateful. My two mentors, Heather Yaland, as I spoke about her and the amount of work she puts into me and the work, amount of work that she does around this country is incredible. And what she teaches me, I'm only able to have the impacts because of this stuff. As I said, I'm a plumber. So any advice, guidance or wisdom that I can learn from anyone else is a beautiful thing. But initially, as an advocate in the mental health and suicide prevention space, Kevin Hines. I mean, I reached out to Kevin. As I've always said, it was my rediscovery of hope visible in other people's kindness. That's why I'm big on impact and kindness, and my hope visible in other people's strength that showed me, hey, if he's living with bipolar disorder and he's living well, I can too. And I reached out to Kevin on social media at one stage and just said, hey, mate, I just...
So who is he?
So Kevin Hines is from Atlanta, Georgia, which is originally from San Francisco. He's 38 years old. He's a mental health and suicide prevention advocate, but his journey all kicked off in the year 2000 when he was 18 years old. He jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge and survived. And so without going too far of detail into his story, within 6 months of him getting, I think it was even shorter than that, within 2 months of back surgery and being in a frame, he told his story for the first time on stage. And he speaks 300 out of 365 days a year for now 18 years, past the day he should have died by suicide.
This guy, I'm sure I've seen this guy on Facebook, videos of this story where he talks about this, and just the odds of surviving that are just ridiculous.
Yeah, three things went right for him that day. So the moment his hands left the rail, he talked, and I think it's important to talk about, is instant regret. Instant regret. It was an unbearable amount of emotional pain. He just wanted it to stop. And as soon as he made that decision, he realised it was the worst decision that he could ever make. And he's very lucky to be here to be able to rewrite those wrongs and to make people aware of that decision, because a lot of people don't get that opportunity, me being one of the lucky ones as well. When he jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge that day, there was a lady less than 2 feet away from him that seen him jump. She rang the local Coast Guard tower, who arrived within a certain amount of time that stopped him from, providing that he survived the jump, being pulled from the water before setting in full hypothermia. He was 75 feet or 25 feet below, whatever it is, below surface level in the ocean, conscious. So he'd shattered his T1, T2, T10 vertebrae into like concrete dust. So he couldn't use anything from his waist down, and he had ability to use his arms, but he was conscious for the whole experience. So he's all the way down below surface level in the water, trying to make his way to the top, but realizing that he's probably going to drown. And then something started circling beneath him, which in what he described was a big shark. And he could only feel that it was slimy and very large, and it kept circling below him. And he's just like, well, not only am I not going to drown, I haven't died on impact. I'm not going to drown from, I'm not going to drown. I'm going to get eaten by a shark. Great. And he just prayed in that situation. And before too long, he found himself buoyant at the top of the water, keeping afloat until the Coast Guard arrived, and the Coast Guard pulled him up and he put him in a brace and rushed him off to hospital. And as he was going into the hospital, the same time he was going into the San Francisco hospital, the same time the bloke was walking out was the foremost renowned back surgeon in the whole of America, and he stayed behind to perform a surgery that's never been done. Wow. Experimented on his back and used that concrete dust of his spine, basically put it back into a paste and put his spine back together. And not only has Kevin lived to tell the tale, he's gained full mobility, he can go to the gym, he can work out, he can do weights. It's remarkable. And to tell that story, but to have it provide that hope, healing and recovery of knowing that he's not only surviving the jump, irrelevant, surviving that attempt, irrelevant, the ability for him to go around the world and to use those experiences to share hope, healing and recovery with people, to show people that they too can live past this and they don't have to make those same decisions. To explain to people that your actions don't have to become reality, and that there is light at the end of the tunnel even if you can't see it. I mean, you know, he does things in a confronting way too and gets kickback for it. But any bloke that goes around the world 300 days out of 365 days a year on his own watch to spread the messages of hope, healing and recovery is a very, very beautiful person. And I'm in the situation I'm in because of blokes like him. So that's the same person I want to be to many others. He's a great role model for people, and he lives and breathes what he experiences every single day. It's hard. He goes through extreme paranoia, visual and auditory hallucinations. He sees death and hears death all the time, but he lives every single day to tell the tale, and he puts the work into his mind the same way we do to our body to look well, same way he does to his mind to feel well. So, I mean, I replicate the things that he does, and he's been a big support to not only myself personally, but the organisation, and I'm just very grateful for people like that. I mean, they provide hope in humanity and show that there's something better to be here for tomorrow.
We ask everyone to bring in a quote that they live by. Do you want to share yours and what it means to you?
Yeah, mine's just recently changed. I just, in the town that we grew up in Warragul, they just had two recent suicides in the last six to 12 months. And one of them was young lad, Corey Cubale, and it was tattooed on. He got a tattoo just before his passing, and it had that quote on it. It was something that he lived by. I mean, it's been a big eye-opener to me just recently since that's all gone down, and I've put my own little spin on it, but I think it's so effective, and it's something that I live by every single day, and I want other people to understand and recognise. And that's the difference between how much we say we care and how much we show it will be the differences this world aches for and needs. So, I mean, we all say we care. Not all of us are showing it every single day, and that's what I mean by these small little token gestures of smiles and messages and checking in with people. Is don't look for the person that's upset, look for the person that's rocking a smile, that smile and depression. Check in with people every single day, no matter what they're going through. Let them get their good things off their chest, let them get the bad things off their chest, but just be there and show them that you appreciate them. Don't take anyone for granted, because I have, and I will never get the opportunity to have beers with those 8 mates or go for a wine or a palmy tonight with those boys and talk shit with them. I'll never have to have an opportunity ever again, and that breaks my fucking heart. So, I mean, if anyone's listening, just don't learn from those my mistakes. I mean, you don't have to go to the situation of losing 8 mates to suicide before you wake up to the importance of our words and actions with every single wake and minute. And I promise that one of two things, that I'll never die by my two hands, and I'll spend the rest of my life in dedication to helping people choose that same option.
Pretty powerful stuff, mate.
Yeah, thank you. This has been amazing. I think everybody listening, myself included, has a lot of takeaways and tangible things that they could start implementing today. So thank you so much for coming on here.
Yeah, thanks.
Truly, I think the work that you're doing is touching the lives of a lot of people. It goes without saying. So thank you.
No, thank you. I mean, it's starting conversations like this, even behind closed doors, that create beautiful ripple effects. And I mean, we just don't know who's going to tune in to these sorts of things. And another opportunity to tell our story, whether that's losing a pet goldfish or losing 8 mates to suicide, is relevant, and it's pain and it's valid, and the more we talk about it, the more opportunity we have to help someone else out there. So thanks for having me, Oil.
I just want to say the courage that it takes for a bloke to sit here for over an hour and share these personal stories, not only of yourself as mates, to the world, is unfathomable. From moment one, there has been watery eyes, not only from him, but I'm pretty touched, completely touched. I don't really know how to finish this up, but I'm just going to lean over and give him a big hug because it's been a long time since I've seen him. So
appreciate it, mate.
Thanks, everyone, and see you next time.
We really appreciate you being a part of the 8 Billion Effect. We'd love to hear any feedback that you have. We'll connect the email address in the bio. Let us know what you love about it, what you don't love about it, as well as anyone who you think would be pretty awesome that we interview. At the end of the day, it's all about living a purposeful and meaningful life full of fulfillment. We hope we can provide any value whatsoever on that, and look forward to having you as listeners in the future.